Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Jacqueline Hines, who is the founder of a society, Emotional Intelligence for UK and Europe. And wow, hello, Jacqueline.
Hello, Tanya.
It's just so lovely to have you on my show today, because you know, I'm really excited because I've not known you for a long time, but in the time that I've known you, I feel that you're really a passionate about emotional intelligence, and you have got so much experience, and I just can't wait to hear your story.
Thank you, Tanya. Can't wait to share it.
Oh, absolutely brilliant, brilliant. So I'm just going to start by asking you a little bit about why emotional intelligence, why you chose to go down that road. So why emotional intelligence?
Okay, thanks for asking. Why emotional intelligence? Well, emotional intelligence is in everything that we do. Mm. And believe it or not, I was already in that realm way before I realized anything about emotional intelligence. My background as a human resource development specialist and trainer, I, in my past, was doing training courses around stress management, conflict resolution and the likes. So they're all part of the emotional intelligence family. Yes. So I'd already been doing it before I realized.
Mm-hmm. And that's so big in terms of, like you say, the emotional intelligence family. There's so many different levels to it, isn't it? Like you said, the conflict resolution and people go through so much. But it's interesting, you know, that you do all this work with emotional intelligence, but I want to hear your story because we are on Real Stories. So I want to hear your stories from the perspective of what you experienced in the workplace that got you to this point. Mm-hmm. So what's your story, Jacqueline?
Ooh, what's my story? What's my journey? Well, my story of bullying and harassment, yes, it's unpleasant, and it is an unpleasant feeling. It's not a nice space to be in. And many times where I have been bullied in the past, I felt totally alone, mm-hmm. without any support whatsoever. And if I think about, you know, where it started in the organizations, the working environment, where someone would tell me, no, I'm not doing it right. And you do the work, and then they come back and tell you it's still not right. And it makes you think that, it made me think that I wasn't good at what I was doing. Mm. So, you know, for a long while, I was walking around doing all of these things, and I've got a lot of skills in my toolkit, and I felt like it was worth nothing.
That's so interesting when you say that you're not doing it right. And I suppose as an organisation, rather than tell someone they're not doing it right, they should be showing them how they do it or what they want and being more specific. So that's about language, isn't it?
Yeah, it is about language, but it's also about support as well, because there was no support. No ups. So a lot of my development, well, the majority of my development has been self-development, where I've self-funded.
Wow.
Because I needed to upskill. I needed to achieve my goals and aspirations. And whilst I was in an uncomfortable position where, you know, a manager who could sign off your development so that you could progress up the career ladder decides that, no, I don't want you to, therefore, I'm not going to sign it off. You need development. You know, bullying and harassment comes in many shapes and forms. And in isolation, it's difficult for individuals to vocalize, you know?
Yes.
If you think about it, if you were to keep going saying, oh, miss, it sounds like you're at school. Miss, sir, she said this to me. She did that to me. So there, where you talk about, you know, how I got into emotional intelligence, it's a case of physician heal thyself. So yes. A lot of the programs that I was actually doing, I found that I was actually coaching people who knew that I was going through the bullying and harassment myself, but they were coming to me for advice. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was part of my healing as well. And yes. It was quite cathartic to share my knowledge with others and inform them. So I suppose in a sense, if I look back on my journey, I wish I had somebody like me at the beginning. I probably would have done more than I'm doing now. But my journey is where it is. And I have to go through these things to sharpen and hone the person that I am today and the tools and the skills that I've got today. So whilst I appreciate it, you know, the journey, it's uncomfortable.
I can see that. And you know what, as you're talking there and you mentioned the word feeling like you're in isolation, in internalizing a lot of that experience, because you know you probably didn't feel strong enough to come forward, but you got to healing yourself by supporting other people and noticing that they were being bullied too, and through that started to help you through to get you to the point that you're doing all of this work. Is that right, Jacqueline?
It is spot on, Tanya. Go on.
And it's just so interesting, because I think as human beings we internalize a lot, and that is the problem. So it's about having leaders who are empathic, so they can be sensitive to what's going on, to then acknowledge or to see, okay, maybe Jacqueline needs someone to talk to, or maybe someone else needs someone to talk to, because it does start with just having that conversation, doesn't it? Yeah,
it does. Mm. It does. And it's about having that understanding. When I think about the organizations and the workforce and the way how bullying and harassment is left to fester, it's unsaid, it's swept under the carpet, I feel disappointed in a sense that there are so many things that can progress an organization and the workforce themselves. You know, I'm one cog in an organization. That's how I saw myself. And if I didn't have my WD-40 to keep my cog oiled so that it keeps turning, it would stop.
Yes.
And if you think about that amplified in other parts of the organization, you know, the workforce are the organization. If organizations want to be progressive, for me, they need to start looking at the reality of the landscape that they've got there and the culture within the organization. Bullying and harassment will not go away unless it's tackled head on and acknowledged and dealt with.
Yes, it's that whole thing like of having that conversation that is uncomfortable and actually being truthful and authentic to get to that stage. But I want to dive in even deeper, Jacqueline, and get a sense of you as a person. So I'm going to go back to your childhood, and I want you to go to one of the most fondest memories that you had of a child, and I want you to share that with me.
Oh, the fondest memory. Oh, my days. When my grandparents were in the UK, my mother came over from the West Indies at an early age of 16, and my grandparents were here already. So I suppose they were part of the Windrush generation.
Yes.
So they were here making preparation for the family that were left in the West Indies. So when my mother came over, you know, my grandparents were here and already established. And my fondest memory was going to my grandparents' house, because we used to go to church. So after church, we always used to go around my grandparents' house, have lunch, and my grandfather played the accordion.
Oh, and, beautiful.
Yeah, and he would sit and he would play music for us. But my grandmother, she was like a storyteller. And I think that's where we get it from, because my mother was a storyteller as well. and sit down, and we talk about all sorts of things, and they would give insight, because in the West Indies they have a lot of kind of like parables and sayings. And although it sounds, oh, that doesn't sound, I don't know what it means, the meaning behind it is so on point. So that for me is my fondest memory. They were here until I was 11, and I hold on to that and cherish that.
That's beautiful, Jacqueline. Can you share a parable that they used to say to you that you've not forgotten, that you were?
Well, one of the things that my grandmother said, and my mum used to say, it's if you say, you know, a hog or a cow or a pig will say to its a piglet will say to this mother, why is your mouth so low? Why do you look so sad? And then the mum's response would be, come, you will see. So basically, what you're saying is, when somebody says, you know, why are you looking this way? Why are you acting out around this scenario? And they say, well, when it's your turn and you walk in the shoes, you'll get to know and find out.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. I love that. And I suppose just listening to that, it does connect to what you do today in terms of, with regards to emotional intelligence, in terms of actually walking in the shoes of that person. Walking in the shoes, that is what you're saying, you know, when you look at hog or when you look at a piglet, and you know, you say, you might look, as in the West Indies, they say, you might look vexed. Why are you vexed?
Yeah, well, this is it.
But if you look beyond the vexed face and see what's going on, and you have the conversation, then you can get to the heart of why that person's upset, and then you can help and support that person. That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. I absolutely love that. And I think it's so important to have those connections with our culture, you know, like say, looking back to the Windrush connection, looking back to you as a child, there's always a connection, isn't there, between what we do as young people to what we do today. So that's amazing. So going back even more, so that was your fondest experience as a young person. What was your challenging, what was your most challenging experience?
I think my most challenging experience as a young person is finding my feet and finding my voice and others listening to what I've got to say. And I found it quite frustrating, especially growing up, in a sense that I had older siblings and also your wider family. You know, everybody's in your business, sort of thing. So, it may not be your mother, but it may be your aunt, vocalizing that, you know, they disapprove, and it's like, well, this is what was going on in my head, but I didn't vocalize it. It's like, you know, what's it got to do with you? Basically, you know, this is my journey. This is my story. This is how I want to do it. And whilst others outside will interfere, my mother always listened. She always listened, and she always would give her opinion, but she would never enforce, and she would always guide, you know. So when you think about, you know, all the things that have helped to shape and hone who you are, my mother, you know, was my go-to person. She was the wind beneath my wings in terms of that.
That's beautiful. So how did you eventually find your voice then? How did you eventually?
I think when I left home, because I lived outside. I'm not born in London, so I came to London when I was 21. But whilst you're at home and everybody's still around you, everybody's got an opinion. So you may, you know, whilst I was working in London, I was still traveling back home.
Where was home?
Home is Bedfordshire. Bedfordshire. So, you know, you'd come in and you'd do bits and pieces, and somebody say, oh, I saw you doing X, Y. Oh, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that. And it's like, look, I'm earning my own money. I am traveling on the train on my own. I do not have trainers on, you know, there's no reins on me. Therefore I'm earning my own money. So therefore I can do what I want. But I found that, you know, a lot of things out of respect, you wouldn't actually vocalize it. It'd be all going on in your head. So there was a bit of a tsunami going on in your with your emotions, in your head, in your heart, where you feel compelled to be polite and respectful, but in the same breath, you wanna find your own feet. It's a bit like a little fawn. When they're born, the mother doesn't do anything unless it doesn't want to move, but she will leave them to let them stand on their feet and encourage them. And then once they get on their feet, then it'll be like, come on, let's run over there. So my mother was very much like that, but others weren't. So I felt sort of like torn in certain aspects. But when I left home, I found my roots in terms of who I was as an individual, what I wanted to do, what I didn't want to do. But my mother was always that temperature check where I would say, Mum, you know, X, Y, Z, you know, she's passed on, you know, and I miss the conversations, but I'm a mother myself. So with my daughter, I am everything that my mother was for my daughter.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And I'm sorry about your mum. It happens. No, I'm sorry about mum passing on. But as you talked about her, you did talk with such passion. And it's interesting because it's almost like people in the village, isn't it? Like you say, everybody around you, you come from a big family, everybody's got a say. I experienced something similar because, you know, coming from a big family myself, one of six, I can totally resonate with you when you say, you know, you were trying to look for your voice and find your voice and just have your own experience. But I suppose you have to kind of say goodbye to the other voices and just do your own thing and be a bit of a rebel to kind of find that voice, don't you, I suppose, to stand up on your own two feet and do it your way and be the mother you are today, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because the thing is, whilst you love them and you appreciate that it's coming from a good place, or you hope it's coming from a good place, you still have to find your own way of doing things. And it's just like the things that we do in emotional intelligence. It is about walking a mile in somebody else's shoes. My journey and your journey will be different. Yes. You know, I can't take your journey for you and you cannot take my journey, but we can walk along together and keep each other company. And that's how I see things, where we share knowledge, we empower, we uplift each other, we inform and we upskill.
Yes. And that's what life's about, really, isn't it? To kind of help each other. It's about informing, it's about supporting. And it's about, like you say, walking together rather than allowing someone to walk ahead or behind you. It's walking together. I feel that's powerful. And it reminds me of something that Martin Luther King always says. He talks about his brothers and his sisters walking together. Because that walking together is crucial, isn't it?
It is crucial. It is crucial in life, but it's also crucial in the place that we're all sitting in at the moment, because how I see it, we're all in a bubble.
Yes.
We're all in a bubble that has affected everyone. And a lot of things that were taking place outside, you know, pre-COVID-19 is amplified under the bubble.
Yes.
So here, where you think about the bullying and harassment, how people feel, the things that we take for granted, the things that we uphold, the things that are unpleasant, good, bad, indifferent, they're amplified. So what we as individuals have to do is look at the space that we're in and see what we can take out of the good, bad, indifferent, and downright ugly and disgusting that is popping up, and see what we can take into the new normal, whatever that is going to look like outside.
That's a great point, Jacqueline, because, like, you know, it's like the negative bias, and we automatically as human beings look at this shadow energy, look at this negative energy, which is important, but sometimes we can stay in it for too long and not move forward. So it's kind of about, I always feel, it's not to shut away that negative bias or shut away that shadow, but it's about finding that balance, isn't it? To then deal with it, because we can't run away from those emotions and just the happy emotions, because then that's not productive. So it's about experiencing both of those emotions and helping each other and supporting each other as we go. Now, I want to know who inspires you, Jacqueline. If you kind of think about in your life, with your work and everything you do, who really inspires you to do the work that you do?
There's so many people I can I can say, but I mean, my first inspiration came from my mother.
Mm.
She was my first tutor.
Beautiful.
You know, the seat of learning is in the home, and she's got her own story, and she didn't go to school from the age of 8 to 12.
Mm.
So her education was impacted at an early age.
Wow.
And this was whilst my grandparents were over here, you know, and I will write her story one day. I promised her I will write a book about her story, and I will do. But she always used to encourage us to do the things that, you know, she couldn't do. And she used to keep saying, oh, I haven't got a degree. I didn't go to college. And I said, Mum, you've got a PhD in life. Because
yes.
I'm telling you, she was one of the most sound negotiators, communicators that I've ever come across, you know, where she would take something that was blown out of proportion, package it up nicely and say, look, there you go. And it's like, oh, why didn't I think of that? And then she would sort of like disseminate it. So she would do it in bite-sized chunks. And I think that's where I got the approach that I have with emotional intelligence and dealing with individuals, teams or organizations in disseminating information that they need in bite-sized chunks at the level and the requirement that is needed. So I think in terms of inspiration, yes, I was so inspired by her. And if I am half the woman she was, I'd be happy.
Oh, you know, it's beautiful. And I'm sure you are. I'm sure she's really proud of you, looking down at you and being very proud of you right now. Oh,
yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, no, I you know, I hope so. But everything that I do, I test to her.
Mm.
You know, first and foremost, and our creator, you know.
Yes, of course.
You know, you give thanks for life. Each day is a blessing. And, you know, as we go forwards, there are other people that inspire. I mean, Michelle Obama, Oprah Winfrey, there's a lot of women, you know, Maya Angelou, lot of women that, and men as well, that have inspired me in different ways. Yes. So if I was to say, aligned to another person, it's difficult because all of them feed me in different ways that help to build my profile. So there are quite a few of them, but you know, I will stick with the anchor, because with the anchor there comes the pivot and the vast array of people that have come in that have inspired me in different ways, through music, through words, through publications. You know, there's so many to think about. But I suppose if I was to sit down and think about it, I'd have to write about it.
Yeah, totally, totally. And you know what? It's so lovely. I love the fact that you said your mother as well, because it's right. You know, nobody knows you like your mother knows you. And that's like, you know, probably the biggest inspiration, as you said, in your life. And I also want to say that it wasn't uncommon, was it, for a lot of people in the West Indies that, because you have to pay for your education, to have gaps in their education because it was paid for, which is different. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of this country, that you live in England, that you don't have to pay for your education. Education is free. And I feel, even me, coming from a teaching background, I used to have this conversation with students constantly, because I used to say to them, you know what, you know, you've got this free education. You don't want to waste it. You want to do what you can with it. You don't want to waste it. And, because sometimes there's not the same respect, especially in inner city secondary schools, from my experiences, there's not always the same respect for education as there is in the West Indies. I mean, coming from the West Indies, or my parents come from the West Indies, my parents had so much respect for it. And it was like, of course, you're going to push forward. You're going to do what you need to do because of that respect for it. And in England, sometimes talking to young people, they don't always have the respect for education.
No.
And that's because it's almost like it's been given to them. So I always have to constantly remind, so it's interesting what you said about your mum between the ages of 8 and 12, because I just wanted to let my audience know that wasn't uncommon at that time. And it sounds to me that because of that experience, she pushed forward and she had that experiences with you and in life. And as you said, she had a PhD in life, you know, which I think a lot of people do when you have those experiences or those failed experiences or sometimes a lack of opportunity. It makes you work 10 times harder than if somebody's handed this to you on a plate. I do believe that. And I've seen it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, I mean, you know, to add to that, it kind of brought up a memory, because I spent a year in the Middle East working with graduates. in a private women's and children's hospital. Mm. And where you say working for it, because they were so privileged, you know, I would be saying, you know, this box of tissues and their tissue boxes, believe me, they were ostentatious. I was thinking, oh, that's an ornament, but it's a tissue box. But I would say to the students, you know, wouldn't it be nice to work towards earning that, you know, getting that beautiful tissue box to sit on your desk? And their response would be, well, I can buy 5, 10, as many as I want. I said, I know, but wouldn't it be more empowering if you work towards getting it and then finally reaching it? And it took a while before it actually sunk in. I did a mentoring with them, and because they're privileged, they don't see that as a problem. I can have it, you know. But it wasn't until we did the mentoring where they had to really buckle down in their studies, but also be assigned a mentor who was more senior, who was not like them, who were in charge of them, that they appreciated it and started to really look at themselves. So, you know, in essence, I was doing a bit of EQ stuff with them as well.
Yes.
So definitely. So they had to sort of like, yeah, they had to look at themselves, a bit of self-reflection about, you know, you want to progress, so therefore you've got to sort of be upskilled and take it on board and apply it, but be aware that this person is in charge, you're not. So yeah, it was difficult, but it was empowering and it was rewarding as well.
It does sound interesting, especially talking about privilege as well, because I feel like you say, sometimes when you work to something, you have to appreciate it. And I suppose what I find interesting is probably their parents, to them to have got to that privilege, their parents may have had to work for it or maybe not. I don't know in every individual case, but I feel it is more rewarding. It is more exciting when you have to work towards something to achieve it. And I think sometimes that's where there's a lack of understanding when you're trying to explain, like you said, it took a while for them to get it. There's a lack of understanding in many things. Even, I mean, it's another podcast if we were to talk about racism, like, you know, we've had that conversation as well.
Yeah.
The idea of privilege and understanding. So you don't understand if you're in a privileged position, but sometimes you have to go through the wars to understand and to connect, even from a perspective of emotional intelligence and empathy. So I think that's a great way to end the show today, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's great you're welcome.
To talk to you. As always have a lovely talk with you. I always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you.
It's great to share today. So I just want to say from Jacqueline Hines and Tanya the Communication Doctor, adios.
Thank you.
My takeaway from the show with Jacqueline is I love the fact that she felt challenged to find her own voice, but she did find her own voice. And when she found her own voice, she's using it right now to do this work with emotional intelligence to help and support other people in the workplace who may have been bullied. And she'd also had her own experience herself. And I also love the fact that her main inspiration was her mother and her mother's strength that carries through till today. It was just so insightful talking to Jacqueline. She has so much power, so much strength, so much resilience in wanting to be a real change maker in the world and support others in the workplace. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.